Welcome to another episode of Soul Stories. On this next episode, we will be speaking to Hannah Russolo, who is a poet. She will be speaking about dealing with grief after she'd had a first-time love with Emma, and she also will be releasing a book soon in 2019. So stay tuned, and you'll listen to the poetry of Hannah Russolo. Good afternoon to another episode of Soul Stories. Today we'll be talking to Hannah Russolo. She is a poet who actually has a new book coming out, I believe, and she'll be reading a couple poems from that. So, hello, Hannah. Welcome to Soul Stories.
Hello, Ariana. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm really excited to be here with you tonight.
Oh, I'm excited that you're here too. I'm looking forward to speaking to you and hearing your poems.
Yeah, so I have a couple of poems that I have with me tonight, all from a book, which will be coming out in 2019. My book of poems, Fragments of You, is a book about the experience I had falling in love for the first time and also experiencing grief for the first time once that love passed.
Oh, that stinks.
And it was... Oh, sorry?
I said, that stinks. That's sad.
Yeah. It was really difficult because this person was the first person who truly made me feel okay to be who I was, like she was sick as well. And, we both we were allowed to be who we were. And, losing her was the hardest things I've ever had to go through. But as with most of my life, my writing was there with me. I've always used writing as a way to express my emotions, parse through my emotions, cope with my emotions. And, I've been working on this book now for 6+ years, which just sounds insane.
Oh, wow. That is a long time.
Yeah. I mean, and it's long for... It's most of my adult life, to be honest. And it's just nice to know that not only that this, huge endeavor of mine is finally coming to fruition, but also that, Emma's going to live on in a way that is more than just me or the people who knew her, but also in print, which is very exciting. But in any case, my book is broken up into 3 parts. And I was hoping if we have enough time to read 2 poems from each part.
Sure.
But if we don't have enough time, I can certainly also just read 1 from each part.
Whatever you feel that you want to do.
That'll work. Okay, well, I'll do a little reading and see how I feel.
Okay, sure. I know that can be kind of emotional sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. It definitely can, but I also know... In a way, that emotion is kind of wanted because it's a way of connecting with the person again,
Sure.
Feeling that emotion and feeling that level of, I don't know, at this point, I don't even know what to call it anymore, but at least it's better than not feeling anything,
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, so these first poems are from part 1. And part 1 is titled, You Are the Moon Seen in the Middle of the Afternoon, Unexpected Beauty.
Wow.
And this is just 2 poems chosen from this first part.
Okay.
Man, okay. Astrophil and Stella. Her eyes are supernovas, pale blue explosions. I've never seen stars that left scars like hers. Her hands baptize me with fire that leaves welts. She tries to heal them with soft kisses, but nothing erases her from my skin. When she leaves, all that's left are after images engraved on my retinas. Proof that something touched me once. And that was actually one of the first poems I wrote for this collection. At the time I was still in college. I was at Smith College, and it was like, you know, maybe a year or so after Emma had died, and my poetry director actually helped me kind of craft it. And, you know, I've changed some of it, but the core of it has stayed the same, which I do kind of like that. And one of the poems I'll be reading tonight has not changed at all since that time.
That's good. Sometimes when inspiration first hits you like that, I mean, I know we like to do a little bit of editing, but usually the first time it really comes through is really like the totally raw feelings that we're having.
Yeah, it's totally the naked truth. Yeah, definitely.
For sure.
So this is the second poem from that section towards the end, and it's titled, "When You Died, I Was 597 Miles Away." I don't know what I was doing then. I was probably smoking with my cousins or eating pie. Maybe I was in the shower thinking about my next poem or what I would do after Thanksgiving break. But I know I didn't hold your hand or speak to you or ever see you while you were lying on that hospital bed. I hope you didn't miss me. I don't remember what your last words to me were. I'm sorry. I just didn't think you would die.
Wow.
Oh, man.
I'm going to ask, were you guys together still when she passed away, or had you broken up, or?
Well, I mean, to be honest, it was kind of a interesting relationship in that, like, there were definitely some physical elements to it, but most of it was very... I guess for me, what was difficult was that I knew back then, you know, she was very sick for a lot of time that I knew her. And, you know, early on, she confided in me. She was like, you know, I don't think anyone hangs out with me. They wouldn't hang out with me if I didn't sleep with them, or they wouldn't be with me. They wouldn't want to be around me if I didn't do these things. And I wanted her to know that at least for me, despite, you know, that love and despite wanting that physical connection, that for me, that me being there would never be questioned. And so I just never kind of went for it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I understand. That's too bad she had to feel that way, though. That's like an awful way to feel.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I think one of the things that was difficult as well about this whole situation was, you know, there wasn't necessarily a reason, you know. She was, as I mentioned, like, you know, like, she was profoundly happy and loving and amazing, and also profoundly sad and broken and unable to really see her own self-worth. And I think that's part of what I was trying to do when I did know her, was like, show her self-worth reflected in me. And, you know, that's not how someone's going to learn to love themselves. You know, like, it might be a good starting step, but it's not all the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man.
Oh, man. Pretty intense stuff.
Yeah.
So I do have a couple of more.
Yeah,
if there's still time.
There's plenty of time, Hannah. Go ahead.
Awesome. So this is from part two. And so each part has a poem that goes along with it. And this is a poem for part two.
Sure.
Which is, a pearl does not know its worth until its shell is pried open and it shudders and it's told its pain is beautiful. And this is one of the poems. The next one I'm going to read is a poem that has remained unchanged.
Okay.
From when I first wrote it, like, 6 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, it's still one of my favorites, to be honest. Spoken in coffee shops, under the covers, and in front of the TV. The butterflies in my stomach feel more like tapeworms. And do you think the earth ever wants to stop burning? And would you ever grow inside of me? And I am just skin over bones. And I still cry out for you. And I saw you in a dream last night and your face was different, and I walked to the edge just to feel the emptiness under my toes, and I wish, I wish, I wish, and...
Wow. So you just, it's kind of like everything, like it was just kind of like going through your mind, like all at once, everything that you were just thinking.
Yeah. And just, you know, like, I think so much of grief, at least my grief was wanting, you know, just like wanting so desperately for things to be different. And yeah, all of the different emotions and things that you're feeling just feel so overwhelming that at some point you just don't even feel them anymore. And, you know, I think that for me, this was kind of just writing down like all of the different crazy things, not even half of the crazy things that are happening inside of me when this was going on.
Wow. Yeah, grief is, it's just, you never really know how it's going to hit you. I mean, I think it really depends on the person and your relationship with them. And, you know, no matter, you know, how many times you lose someone, it's like always different.
Yeah. And then for me, my grief, you know, was very much expressed in a written way. You know, you know, after she died, I just kind of clammed up. Like, I didn't want to talk to anyone. I didn't want to be around anyone. I didn't want to do anything. But writing was kind of the way that at least I began to heal to some degree, or at least as much as you can heal from something like that, to make a place in your heart for a person, you know, yeah, to live. Yeah.
I mean, it takes a lot. For me, was writing. You know, it also takes a lot just to let somebody into your heart as well. I mean, you know, once you let that person in your heart, I think once, you know, and then like if you lose someone, oh my God, it like tears a part of you out.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. It's just, you know, it feels like, it kind of takes away your capacity to feel, if you feel hollow, you feel sucked out.
That's for sure.
And I think one of the things that I thought a lot about throughout my process of grief as well was like, you know, not only how am I dealing with the grief, but also like, what is my memory of Emma becoming, you know, like I think of that every as like, and it came to me then that every plan is a tiny prayer to Father Time, and like that our camera is just it's like our memory is just a broken camera within our mind, you know? Mm-hmm. And I started thinking just like how much my memory of this person is tainted by my own experience of this person, you know, and how much, like, what does it mean to live a life without someone? And what does it mean for my memory of that person? You know, how is that changing and growing, and how, you know, she'll never stay static. And does that mean that I'm losing a part of her? But in any case, this next poem is kind of about that. Mm-hmm. It's called Flicker. So Flicker. Dim movement against a blank screen. Blurred bikes and brothers, crumbling houses and the Atlantic seashore. A fragile trunk against a bright blue expanse, naked. The flash washes her out. I can see her pores, dark pinpricks on pale skin. The film reel flickers, her face stuck upside down. I think that's how my memory felt or feels now, you know, it's flickering, it's upside down. It's not 100% accurate.
Yeah.
And what does that mean with the dead, you know? Do they ever kind of reclaim their memories for themselves, or are they only just lived on in our memories of them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of does make you think and make you wonder. But, you know, I think it makes us feel better to know, like, that a part of them are, you know, they are with us, you know, somehow in spirit. Mm-hmm. And, like, I feel like when you lose a person, it's for a while, it's like they're nearby you. I don't know how, but it's like you can sort of feel them. And then, like, yeah, I think once they move on, and then maybe you don't maybe feel them as much, but you have, you know, like their memories and their love, you know, in your heart. But I think that's kind of how I feel. I don't know how others feel.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely feel that. I think that for me, like, what was hard for me was I felt a lot of anger after Emma died. You know, I feel like a lot of my faith, what little faith I had and some sort of power, left me. And I was just angry, you know, I didn't think it was fair. Mm-hmm. She's so young, like she didn't deserve it. And I think for a long time that kind of halted my healing process, you know, even just healing her around me was difficult because I was just so angry. But, you know, healing is something that kind of happens without you realizing it. You know, I remember thinking, like, I am never, like, I can never get over this. And here I am, still standing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I survived.
Yeah, it totally feels that way when you lose someone because you feel like you're never ever going to heal from the grief. And in a way, I think we do start to move on. I mean, we still miss that person. I kind of feel like we never completely 100% heal. Like, we're still a little saddened by it, but somehow we find the strength. Somehow life gives us the strength to continue to move on. And then maybe we'll do stuff like in memory of that person or just something to kind of, you know, honor their memory.
Yeah, yeah, and I guess this book is my way of doing that, you know, is you know, and I think for a bit I was nervous because I thought, you know, who am I to write a book about someone else? But in the end, it's a book about my experience of this person, and I don't think that she would be disappointed at all.
No, not at all. And your book, it helped, you know, it's helping you, you know, try to heal, and it could help somebody else to heal who's been in a situation like you. I mean, not only are you, you know, you're probably helping you, you might begin to help others, and you could always talk to other people about how to deal with grief, especially with someone that was close to you who was really sick.
Yeah, and I mean, that was kind of what I was hoping, you know, I was hoping that this book would be, because, you know, especially since, like, you know, and I don't necessarily mention it especially in this book necessarily, but, you know, the cause of death for Emma was overdose, which I think is quite difficult for a lot of people to, you know, like, she was very sick, and one way of her of dealing with that was through many different substances, which honestly, like, I wish she didn't do it, but I don't blame her either, you know? But in any case, like, the recovery process of that, it just, it kind of feels like, you know, Stephen King kind of mentioned how when you write a book on the, it kind of feels like basement workers up until suddenly they arrive up at the top and you're like, oh, this is what you've been working on.
Yeah.
The healing kind of that too. You know, like, it happens when you're not thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much true. You know, it's kind of like a lot of writers, you were sort of like hobbits for a while we were working on something and then we bring it up for by to see, you know, like, well, here it is. This is what's been going on.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the third part of the book is as well, is like the process of healing.
Wow.
And so the third part is called It Begins When You Wake Up But Keep Your Eyes Closed.
Oh, wow.
I just briefly want to talk about that because for me, that moment has always been like super magical. You know, I've never really wanted to get out of bed right away. I kind of like that moment of just processing the fact that you are awake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so this is the first poem from that section that I'm going to read now. And it's called Apotheosis.
Mm-hmm.
This poem isn't you. You are too all-encompassing to be encompassed in a poem. This poem isn't a memory of you. Memories are too malleable to be immortalized in poems. This poem isn't a love letter to you. Those can only be said in person. This poem isn't processing you. That can only be done alone. This poem isn't about you. You are too radiant for me to be able to constrain you to words. This poem is for me and for them to keep. It's not enough.
I like that. It's not for me, it's for them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I was scared, you know. I just kept thinking, like, what is this representation that I'm putting forward of this person? And I guess I kind of wrote this thinking, like, well, it's about you, but it's also not about you. It's about me and it's about them, you know, like, it's about us connecting after you are gone, you know, I mean, gone in the form that we were able to talk to you, but still present in many ways. And that's what this last poem is about, which I will read. And then we can maybe talk a little bit more, but this last poem is kind of about that, about seeing this person, you know, kind of no matter where to go, you know. And briefly, just an anecdote, you know, when before Emma died, she would always say, like, streetlights always turn off and on around me. Like, that's just the type of person I am. That's super lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And after she died, like, I don't know if it's just, like, confirmation bias or whatever, but I swear, like, streetlights turn on and off around me all the time now.
Wow.
And so this poem is kind of about that.
Huh.
I see Emma. In the cracks of the street where the tufts of grass grow, I see Emma. In the streetlights that baptize me and the fire that consumes me, I see Emma. In cracked fingernails and jagged bottles, I see Emma. In the corners of bookstores and morsels of sweetness, I see Emma. In my own tunnels of darkness, I see a light. I see Emma.
Wow. You say, like, so much in so few words.
Yeah, I think when I first started writing, something that was really important to me was, you know, having poetry that felt super accessible. Because I feel like when I read poetry, you know, I liked a lot of poetry, but when I read poetry when I was a kid, I'd just be like, I don't understand half of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want anyone to ever feel that way when they read my poetry.
Oh, yeah, I totally understand. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's what I have for you today. If you've been listening and you want to look more about my work and follow me, you can go to facebook.com/HMR Poetry. And soon I'm hoping to have a website, which will be hmrpoetry.com, but I still need to figure out domain pricing and all of that good jazz. But I would love to have you like me, support me. My book should hopefully, will definitely be coming out in 2019, but I'm not sure when within the year. My publisher and I are still figuring that out. And if you go to my website and my Facebook page, you can also see other places I've been published and other poems that I have out in the world.
That's awesome. I look forward to your book coming out, and I will PM you probably some other places you've probably heard of for websites, because I don't want to feel like people think I'm advertising. So
yeah, no, I get that.
But I appreciate you coming on. It's awesome. I really, even though it's sad and helpful and inspiring in all those ways, but I'm glad that you came on to tell your story about Emma and you know, your guys' relationship and, you know, your process of healing. A lot of people need to know about that. Healing, you know, I mean, it's a difficult thing. And I think what people need to know is that they're not alone in that process. And when mm-hmm. people can write or, you know, speak on that topic, you know, it can maybe help them feel better.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, thank you so much, Ariana.
Oh, you're
it's
welcome.
Really been such a pleasure. And, you know, check out Sharing Off Grass.
Thanks, Hannah.
Thank you so much.
All right. You have a great night.
You too. Have a lovely evening. Goodbye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Soul Stories. We are part of the Cloverleaf Radio Network and Cherry House Press. The Cloverleaf Radio Network consists of The Hollywood Connection, Cloverleaf Radio, Night News Radio, and Soul Stories. Cherry House Press is a small publishing press where we try to help publish new authors, and we also accept some of the seasoned authors as well. We publish poetry, horror, science fiction, and fantasy. We are accepting submissions, so you can visit Cherry House Press on Facebook or on the web at cherryhousepress.wordpress.com. Thank you for listening.